That's Alvin McQueen, not McQueen. Sorry, I always make that mistake. Alvin Queen on drums. That's him on drums with There's Blues Everywhere from his 2006 album, I Ain't Looking at You. I love that. I love the title of that album, I Ain't Looking at You. Jesse Davis is on alto sax, Terrell Stafford on trumpet and flugelhorn, Mike LaDon on the Hammond B3 organ, and Peter Bernstein on guitar. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. We have so much to free our mind of, so there should be no shortage of topics that you discussing today. For those of you joining us for the first time, Free Your Mind Friday is a concept that actually was given to the program by a listener, and it was a great idea. So I said, thank you for it. And we've been doing it ever since, every Friday. We dispense with our regular programming, and callers call in their views. They make the strongest case possible for their point of view, and they take the conversation wherever they want it to go. And our job is to listen as carefully as we can, and if we have the good fortune of getting in on the air, we can state the opposite point of view. Okay. So 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's get started. Please be as concise as you can and as strong as you can. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Utrice.
Hey, wonderful Harvey, what's going on with you?
Well, with the arrival of all sorts of electric vehicles, including electric pickup trucks, that are primarily used by people in the construction trades like carpenters, electricians, and plumbers, I'd like to share an idea that I have with you and your vast audience that will really help to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels like coal, oil, methane, and nuclear. With Tesla's Cyber Electric Pickup Truck, GMC's Hummer Electric Pickup Truck, as well as Rivian's, Lordstown Motors, Bollinger's, and Ford's all-electric F-150 pickup electric pickup truck trucks, which will all be on sale in 2021. It's time to reduce the. It's time to introduce the concept of solar electric tool storage boxes that are designed for these and other electric pickup trucks. Solar electric tool storage boxes will be used to both safely store and recharge a wide variety of cordless electric tools such as electric drills, electric screwdrivers, electric saws, rechargeable cordless electric staplers, and cordless compressors, to name but a few. Simply put, solar electric tool storage boxes are made from a variety of materials like aluminum, stainless steel, strong reinforced plastic, wood, and carbon fibers. And these tool storage boxes are mounted behind the driver's cabin as well as around the electric pickup truck's cargo area. And these solar electric tool storage boxes have a solar panel that's mounted on top of the box with the lid on top of the box lid, which faces the sun. And the solar electricity that's generated by the toolboxes photovoltaic cover. Photovoltaic is another word for solar electric. It means light to electricity. This photovoltaic electricity is stored in a rechargeable battery located inside of the solar electric tool storage box. And the tool storage boxes, rechargeable battery, can be used to both charge the owner's cordless electric tools as well as help to power their all-electric pickup truck. Because millions of these electric pickup trucks will be sold worldwide, the manufacture and use of solar electric tool storage boxes will help to dramatically reduce our need to burn greenhouse gas-producing fossil fuels, which would normally be used to supply the electricity that's needed to charge up these millions of cordless electric tools as well as power the electric pickup truck. So it's time to get star-powered by using solar electric tool storage boxes in conjunction with our new all-electric pickup trucks. And I just want to thank you, Utrice, for letting me say that.
All right. Thank you for saying it. 888-874-4888. Patricia from New York. How are you?
Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I hope everyone continues in good health and everyone is safe.
Thank you.
You know, Utrice, I think we need to begin to expand the audience in terms of the general understanding that our community has about elected officials. So this is what happened. As you know, I have a penchant for calling in on Sunday talk shows. And last week, Sunday, I called in while a local elected official was on. As a matter of fact, this elected official is going to be running for mayor of New York City next week. Next year. And so I asked him the question because, of course, the discussion was about the controversy around the tragic killing of George Floyd. And so I asked him the question that I ask all elected officials. Why is there such a reluctance to use an economic strategy to address our condition? And the response that the elected official said to me was that if I wanted to do that, that I should take my passion and I should initiate the boycott that I was talking about. And I was not disappointed by that response. I mean, every time I ask an elected official that question, that is their standard response. But what they fail to understand is the question that I'm asking is about leadership. What's your responsibility to us? You are defaulting back to me about what I should do. I'm asking you, what are you going to do? And invariably the response is nothing. And I think, you know, black and brown communities, they don't hear that. And I don't know the people who heard the question understood what I was asking. And so I think what I'm going to do is begin to frame my comments differently, because I don't think sometimes we're framing our comments in a way that the masses understand.
Well, that's a very good observation. And it happens to hit home, because I've seen so many great opportunities lost because people did not frame their questions and comments in the appropriate way. And so they provide an escape route. they give the elected officials a way to kind of dance around the question rather than answer it. So I think you're right here.
Well, I've decided that what I'm going to do is continue to press. And so the next time I have the opportunity, the question that I'm going to ask is, what is leadership's responsibility to the community? They're always telling the community what their response is to them, but there doesn't seem to be any reciprocity. And I think I also want to share with the community that, you know, they look at the Democratic Party as their salvation, when in fact, you know, I have to agree with Ed who called in yesterday. The Democratic Party, you know, even when you can't win a fight, you at least have to put up resistance. And they have done nothing. The resistance that they could have put up against all of these nominations, even though these nominations come through the Senate, at least in the House there could have been an uproar. Nothing. Absolute silence. So all they really want is a target to be the boogeyman, to deflect from the fact that they are absolutely doing nothing. Black and brown communities don't understand that either.
Well, we will have no choice soon but to understand it, because it's going to get rough. And pretty soon people will see that they have no other options but to stand up and be accounted for. They will have to fight, if only for their own preservation. So we will anticipate a pretty rough road ahead, and it will force some to change their tune a little bit, their attitude, and stop waiting to be informed as to what to do. They have their own brains, They can formulate their own responses to the situations at hand. But, it's a plantation system, and people are terrified of leaving the plantation. They're terrified of the repercussions. Thanks so much, Patricia, for calling in today. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
Oh, we're hanging in there just like the rest of the country. I
Yep.
want to wish everybody in the PRN and Lead Stories listeners a productive and safe weekend. Love
Thank you.
Patricia. She's one of my favorite callers. I just want to
Yeah. So, what are you freeing your
that.
mind of today?
Well, excuse me if I'm kind of all over the place, but I wanted to give a report about what happened to me this week in regards to the aftermath, or during the riots, uprising, whatever people classify it as. So Monday I went to help out clean some black businesses that were affected by the rioting and the looting that happened in Chicago. And what was so interesting was going to the South Side, because I live in a neighborhood that is not predominantly black, but we have white people and other people in our neighborhoods. And as I was going to the South Side to help out, as I'm leaving my area, I see policemen like everywhere. Just kind of like monitoring everything. But as I go into the parts of the South Side where, it's predominantly, black areas and the areas that have been highly affected by, what had happened, I didn't see a cop for almost 10 miles. I mean, it was very indicative to how the police felt about us, destroying, the stores in our community. Because from my also understanding, on the north side, where it is predominantly white, there were cops everywhere protecting the businesses. But in our neighborhoods, there was not a cop in sight. Like, you could rob a bank and get away with it during that time. So I was like, that was one of the noticeable things that I saw. And like I said, we get media images of us, looting the stores, and I'm not for it or not against it, but basically, I think you mentioned this early in the week, how it is a reaction to, what we've been suffering, for years, decades, and even longer than that. So this actually goes beyond what, George Floyd. I mean, I'm not sure what the tipping point is with, George Floyd, because he is one of many who have been, systematically executed under the system of white supremacy. So I just thought about that, and it just resonated in my mind, what has happened in our relationship with the police. Which has been, it's always been bad, but this just really resonated with my mind in regards to that. And just to, just as somewhat of a positive note, a lot of the black businesses did not get destroyed. There might have been one or two on the South Side. There were a couple on the West Side who did get, who did happen to. But I found that my job wasn't as hefty as it was, because we only cleaned up like about two businesses, and the other ones, they just needed to be boarded up for the week. But other than that was very, very interesting, being out there. And then also too, while we were out there were people still kind of like looting some of the major stores. But I noticed a lot of out of town license plates, which kind of verifies what people have been saying about, out of town people coming in trying to cause all of these, disruptions and disturbances. So I did notice a lot of out of town license plates driving, to the heart of the areas in on the South Side where black people live at. So You know, sorry, I'm all over the place, but, you know, I just wanted to give my, you know, give my observations on this.
Well, I'm glad that you went out there to try to be of assistance. I'm glad you also saw some interesting differences in the approach of law enforcement to communities of color and to other communities. But we have to come to grips with our reality ourselves. It's not all peaches and cream. We do have elements in our community that continue to go against the program. And that's probably because we don't know what the program is. So I think what will happen now, gradually perhaps, but it will happen, where communities begin to define themselves, take charge of themselves, and control themselves. That's, you know, I've been talking about this for a long time. There are communities where not a single bit of attack on their buildings and stores would occur. Why? That's a long discussion. But generally, it would boil down to that these people have the benefit of ongoing police protection, which is, of course, the result of their taxpayer dollars. But it is about a community defining itself also in terms of what it is entitled to and what it will not tolerate, disrespect. It will not tolerate people, as you call them, outsiders. But it's not so much that they're outsiders. That's another thing. That in itself tells us we do not recognize ourselves as one community. We see people as strangers coming in. It's the same, absolutely the same definition that you will get talking from white America, outsiders. So we will go through this change, hopefully, and force people to confront the internal contradictions that we have, and there are many. And hopefully we'll get closer and closer to forging for ourselves our notion of community and making it work. It worked for quite a while in the most obscene conditions of slavery. We have to get close to that again. It's our only protection. I keep saying it's our only salvation, community. Thanks for calling in. Duke from Jersey City, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. How you doing?
Okay. How about you?
I'm doing well. You can hear me okay?
Yes. What are you freeing your mind of today?
Okay, so it's Free Your Mind Friday, so I can pretty much go anywhere I want, right?
Anywhere you want.
Okay, so I hope you have a sense of humor. I'm going to talk as fast as possible because I don't want to waste a lot of time. Okay, first, I want to say big up to Jay from New York who always calls, David, the elder who always calls. I love it when David calls. I learn so much. Ed from Queens with his thumbs. So many of your callers, I've always worked and never had time to listen. Now I got nothing but time. So I listen every day. I don't always agree with your positions, but I learned what I know, my political philosophy and what I think about life. You were such a big part as my teacher. I go back with you from way back in WBAI in the 80s. So I've been listening for a long time. I'm total support of the protesters out there. In terms of the looters, I got to say it, and people not going to like to hear this, I kind of support the looters too. I just wish they weren't looting small businesses and mom-and-pop type companies. Go up to 740 Park Avenue and loot that building down to the ground. I'm 100% in support of that. People are talking about no cops. This is the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. Can you imagine a society with no cops? So that's a non-starter. People who are talking that non-cop stuff, just drop it. It's never going to happen. What else? When I saw, I think it was the Sandy Hook situation, right, where the mass shooter killed all the kids?
Yes.
When that happened, Utrice, and nothing substantial came out of that, I knew that we were in a hopeless society. If they would allow their young white children to be killed like that, and just the tiniest little change happened, then nothing's going to change in this case. Yeah, those cops might be put in jail. There might be some little minor adjustments around the edges, but society as a whole is not going to change. And that's why I kind of support the looters, because I'm at a point now where I just want the whole thing to be disrupted so that the top 10%, they got to stop and say, we got to make changes. Or these people are just going to burn down the whole damn thing. Okay, what else? And now here's my last 2 points, and then I'm going to hang up. These are two direct questions to you, Utrice. One, whatever happened to Hugh Hamilton? Do you have any connection with him? Is he still doing anything in communications? Is he on the air anywhere? Do you know? And two, what do you say about the COVID tests? In other words, what are the tests? Because I keep hearing that none of these tests are 100% reliable. And I'm going to hang up because I know I took enough time, and I'll listen to what you got to say.
Okay. Hugh, I haven't talked to in quite a while. But the last I heard, he was doing some reporting on WBAI, but I haven't, we lost touch with each other. And I have to reach out to him again. He's a fine journalist. He's very experienced. And, you know, he's a bit on the conservative side, but that is to be expected. Why? Because he's from the Caribbean. We used to have these running arguments all the time. But great love for Hugh. And I hope soon to reconnect with him. There are a couple of people I lost touch with just because of the way life has been turning out. You get involved in all these other things that crash land into your life. So just recently, in fact, I was talking to someone about him. So I'll make it a point to try and find where he is and what he's up to. The COVID test, like any other medical test, especially since it's new, it is fraught, or we should expect that it is fraught with irregularities, and it is not consistent and all of that stuff. Don't forget, they're working things out as we go. This was not a test that was very, very expansively tested, and the results were conclusive, and it went through its permutations, and people feel comfortable about the test. The test is still unfolding. And so it appears to at least give an indication of whether a person has the virus or not. So in that sense, it's useful. But then on the flip side of that same coin, we're hearing that the tests are not necessarily conclusive. So it's a waiting game to see who develops the first test, or the first, what you call it, the vaccine. I'm not going to be involved in the vaccine part of it, but it is something that is evolving. And so we have to keep our minds open to the fact that there's nothing certain about it yet. It will have to go through several permutations, as I said, before scientists are reasonably satisfied that the results are consistent and therefore credible. So we're not there yet. But it's better than what we had, because what we had was nothing. So this is how it works. In a pandemic or the outbreak of any new disease, this is what happens. Whether it was typhoid fever, or whether it was the swine flu, or any major pandemic, or any major disease, it is typical that you would find that people are doing things on the go, and they tweak and tweak and tweak until they're reasonably sure that, okay, we can have some faith in this. Not absolute faith yet, because it's a factor of time and collecting data from all over the place. So that's a very onerous task. But in the meantime, you just keep your fingers crossed and concentrate on what you know is going to be a good thing to do, which is prevention. Try everything you can to bring those numbers down, the incidence of the disease down, and that would help a great deal. And in the meantime, the scientists will work on developing some kind of response to it that hopefully will help. Thanks for calling in. Ashley from Westchester, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Oh, okay.
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, how are you today? I hope all is fine. I'm going to talk as fast as I can. I'm also an old listener from the 80s when you were on TalkBack and WBAI. Plus, I met you twice already in New York when you came. Anyhow, I wanted to just make a couple of comments. One was to Tricia's thing dealing with the elected officials. I think I just came to the conclusion this week that they are saying, well, write to your congressman, write to your representative, et cetera, express your problems. But I suddenly realized, okay, it's a waste of time to write to them if you don't have that $1 million in the envelope as you're writing and complaining. That's the first thing. The other thing is about the looting. I have to disagree with the former caller about the looting. I'm not for that at all. Because, as you say, you know, we need community. Unfortunately, too many of our people are caught up with material possessions, and they don't realize agent provocateurs. I'm from the old school 60s and 70s.
All right.
Yeah, agent provocateurs are very prevalent. These young jacks don't know nothing about that. They get set up. The agent provocateurs open the doors for them, knowing which doors they like to run through, and they run right to it. Because they're too greedy for material possessions. This is not the age of Tutankhamun, and they're not going to bury you with it. That's it for me.
All right. I'm so glad that you called. And you were on point both times. Both points. Thank you so much. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon to you, Utrice, and to your listeners, audience, and big ups to the guests that mentioned me. More power to you, brother. Listen, Utrice, I was going to speak about something, but Patricia, she opened up a pandemic box in a sense. I heard her.
She tends to do that, doesn't she?
I heard her last Sunday. And I must say, every time I hear Patricia on Sundays, I get a big smile on my face. So I just want to thank you. It starts my day off pretty good at around 8:30 in the morning. But the question that I know she gets better than anybody else is that the job of these politicians is, number one, to get into office, then to raise money to get reelected, and in the end, do nothing for nobody but trying to solidify their position in staying in office. Case in point, Elliot Engel just got caught on a hot mic saying something that he had no business saying. Sadly to say, if you really be honest and look at it, Most politicians, once they achieve a certain position, no longer do anything for their constituents or their community. It's just we think that they do. But if you really study their record and examine their record like you've done when you were at the City Sun, and I know the brother had mentioned one of your past cohorts, Hugh Hamilton. My only question to you is this, Sister Utrice, how is our brother Cox, I think it is. I get his name sometimes. Clinton Cox.
He continues to write. He is totally into writing. As you know, he's written several books of history, specifically concentrating on early America. And he has written comprehensively about that. He continues to do that. That's his main thing. You can find many of his books through Scholastic, the publisher of his work, mostly is Scholastic, but he writes for mostly children and young people, but a lot of older people are reading his books because he writes in a way to break everything down and make everything understandable. And it's remarkable because I know he has to resist the urge. He's been a reporter for so many years, but he handles this particular task very well. And he has retrieved many hundreds of pages of our history by documenting our history in the United States. So he continues with that work.
At the City Sun were a dynamic duo. Y'all were like Batman and Wonder Girl or whoever she was, Batgirl, whatever. I'm just y'all just did great work. But you know, what I'm trying to get at is, unfortunately, because we don't hold politicians responsible and we allow politicians to get away with the shenanigans that someone like President Trump does every day, and we don't have media that really question them in the manner like you did this last week, we just caught in the mirage of constantly going around and around in circles of being abused, mistreated, used, played upon, hoodwinked, bamboozled, and just getting nothing in return. And when it's all said and done, the next person will come and behave and act in the same fashion. And then years later, you're in a position to where as it's no difference. And I'll leave you with this. Case in point, what's going on today? When I first got in the movement, 30 years ago with Sister Soldier and Anissa, is basically the same thing going on right now. It don't change. It just evolves.
But, you know, here's something that we really need to concentrate on, and that is to what degree, what was our role in this? We always exempt ourselves and say it's the politicians, it's the politicians. What I am desperately hoping that we could achieve in the not too distant future is that we come together as a community. No matter what side you're on, or if you don't even have a side, and we commit to working together on behalf of our community and its survival. You see, we are at war with ourselves because the Democratic Party has made it so, the Republican Party has made it so, American politics has made it so. But that doesn't mean that that's what we ought to follow. We have a history of talking to each other, listening to each other. And, you know, at some point we will arrive at the idea of who is accountable and what is accountability to mean. But we have exempted ourselves of all accountability. And we have targeted the elected officials as the enemy. We can't afford to do that. So we have to find a way to bring everybody back in. Because this is a crisis for us. Our leadership, such as it is a captured leadership. We have no control over them. And we need to initiate some kind of moves that would help everybody see that we all victims of a system that means us no good. So we have to work together on major things: healthcare, education, affordable housing, employment. These are the things that we must work together on. We cannot simply just jettison the people that we ourselves voted for. And we can't allow it to be the case that we make people understand we no longer want them. So the other side says, I'll take them and have them implement my program in your community. So this is a major, major piece of work that has to be done. We have to have some kind of consensus about reforming and reformatting our notion of community and somehow trying to find a way to work together. Thanks so much. Ma'at, you are on the air.
Community. First, I want to respond to Patricia and her call. It's interesting that politician immediately went to boycott as opposed to some real abolition in terms of the police, and also in response to the previous brother's call, because the police get billions of dollars. A few years ago, they added 2,000 police, and de Blasio was on the air trying to claim that it was community clamor as opposed to politicians. So in terms of even what they police, so there's talk, I heard a DeRay McKesson, BLM activist, talk about why are they responding to mental health issues? Why are they responding to drug issues, et cetera, et cetera? So I think that we are at some tipping point, and we need not be too cynical. But the point that I really want to make is something that, I'll be getting the name later, but it's a professor from Bowling Green University, and he was on WNYC yesterday, I think with Allison Stewart, all of it, and he was making the point, a root point, that these cops, these white cops, fear black men and boys. Okay, so where that fully brought me to is our beloved ancestor, Dr. Frances Cress Welsin. She told us and gave us illustrations of the unconscious, conscious, whatever, concern about the whole idea of race, which is the socially created concept, and their genetic annihilation. Right, so when they look at it, just to take a little further, when they look at and Neely Fuller, before Dr. Welsin laid it out, and what is the root of white supremacy? So until we address the very concept of race, the genome project, charting genes, discounted it. And the fact that when a so-called black person and a so-called white person mate and have a child, no matter how, if the child could pass for white, it's still a black person. So that negates that idea. But that's my main point as to where, and it's fear and loathing.
their genetic annihilation, so they want to be tall. As Toni Morrison put it, they want you to be on your knees.
Well, that's if you're predisposed to being on your knees. And if you pay attention to the education that has been made available to us, you can't be the same after you've read an Amos Wilson book, any of his books. You simply cannot be the same. You cannot have the same thoughts. You would be a changed person in and of yourself, because now you're understanding things at a whole different level. Shashi McIntyre, we have been blessed with great minds, but we're not listening. We're not reading. You cannot possibly, as I said, you can't read an Amos Wilson book anywhere. Amos Wilson book and not understand the point that he's making, and not understanding the predictions that he's making based on our conditioning and behavior. Deep psychological stuff. But are we reading? No. Are we making these things available? No.
And Eutrice, where are the Amos Wilson scholars?
You see, it's not a matter to ask where are they. The fact is they've been with us and we disregarded them. When you look at the full range of scholarship that has been made available to us in every subject, practically, people have no familiarity with them. Dr. John Henry Clark. You know, you could go on and on and on and on. The person who totally dismantled the notion of Columbus discovering the New World.
Right.
I mean, we have the knowledge. We have it available. One man spent his entire life and his resources to put together a library. You go there and it is practically empty in the middle of Harlem. We don't have Leonard Jeffries. We have so many people who have done the work. And they did the work hoping that it could be transmitted continually. There's a body of work absolutely available, and people don't know it because they don't want to know it. So we need to get off of that tip, as they say. We have people who have done the work. There is a lot of work done. Edward Scobie. Nobody has documented British history, especially in the so-called colonies, like Edward Scobie. Nobody. So when we start lamenting about the things that we need, you've had them all these years. Going back to the very beginning, you had
Eutrice, I was not lamenting. I was talking about a scholar who's an ancestor that gave us a prime answer and key. That was my point.
I understood it, but it also branched into what we need to be talking about. Why are we ignoring our scholars? Who gave their lives. Dr. John Henry Clark gave every penny he had to research and making sure that he could write another book. We have not treated our own well at all. Ivan Van Sertima, raising his own money, always traveling someplace to document the presence of Africans in the Americas. We disregard and disrespect our own scholars. Nobody else compares to them on that level of the work that they do and have done and continue to do. Nobody. And they're like strangers to us. We don't know these people. Shashi McIntyre. I could name a whole bunch of people who should be like family to us, so familiar to us. And the work that they have done at such sacrifice so that we can know. That is the great sin that we commit time and again. We refuse to acknowledge them and their work, let alone incorporate that knowledge in our everyday lives. This is unforgivable, but it reflects, as Amos Wilson said, it reflects our own disdain for ourselves, the conditioning we have been through to disregard the importance of ourselves, of all different facets of ourselves. We're in trouble. And that's why we need urgently to find ways to connect and reconnect, because we're losing weight. We are hemorrhaging for no reason. Thanks for calling in. David, you're on the air. You're on the air. David, are you there? Gwen, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Therese, you there? Therese?
Hi. Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you. I'm so glad. I wanted to share that I got up this morning to two videos that two great activists sent me, Ralph Poynter, who is Lynn Stewart's husband, and Betty Davis. The video I saw was a young Black woman coming home after curfew. She must have gone to the bodega. It was an empty parking lot, and a policeman came up to her and said, "You're out after curfew." And she said, I'm just going home. I went to the store." And then he said, "You're out after curfew." And she said, "Well, I'm going home." And then he pushed her, and she said, "Hey, don't push me." And then he pushed her again down on the ground and threw a glass bottle at her. And then he shot her four times, and she was pregnant. Now, I don't know exactly the day this happened, whether it was yesterday or last night, because that wasn't listed. And I can't lift this from Facebook to turn it over to a TV station. However, when I went to the phone store to ask them to help me, the young man there said he did see it on TV. There was another video that was also sent to me of two young women. And it was, these are very thin young women. One of them, there was none of these things happened at a protest. These were just women walking. And the one woman was on the ground being pummeled and punched by this cop. And somebody was filming her friend watching and begging them to get off her. And they did not. And then they took the other one down. I am sure you already know about the store owner who was killed a couple of days ago in some kind of crossfire, and they left his body out for 12 hours. Very desecrating thing to do. Last night, there were apparently six shootings in the United States where people died. In my own neighborhood, I live on the other side of 96th Street, which has always been treated way differently. And our racist mayor came out and said, "You can't go below 96th Street. Nobody goes below 96th Street. Everybody stays on the other side." And so basically the mayor who talked about the Tale of Two Cities is actually encouraging the Tale of Two Cities to continue on. But I wanted to share these things with you. They were so disturbing. And I also wanted to say that I think you may see the removal of Trump as the president, because I believe that with the with Mattis pulling away from him, that there may be other military or most of the military now going behind him, saying that this man has to be removed according to the 25th Amendment because he's encouraging so much of this. The other thing is, this morning I saw on the video that he had a flatbed of all kinds of equipment coming to fortify the wall at the White House. He's building yet another wall around the fence that's already there.
He loves walls.
That's because he's a blockhead. But seriously, I wouldn't
be
upset.
He loves walls.
I just wanted to say that we might see that would if he was taken out by the military, that would be literally a coup d'etat in America, which would be the first time we ever saw that happen. It's very, but he really, he has to be removed.
It will drive people to I don't know, distraction. It can't happen. It cannot be allowed to happen for all kinds of reasons, some of which are, you know, purely symbolic. But the fact is, it is, in fact, a defeat for the rest of us to reach the point where we, the people, have to take him out of office. No. There's a process. You see, this is where it gets dicey. We, the people, cannot take him out of office. The mechanism to take him out of office has existed. I was one of the first ones talking about it. The first program I did after his inauguration, saying, we've got to find a way to get this guy out because it's only going to get worse, because he was so evident to me that he was in very bad mental condition. He should not have been in that office at all. And he started... People think that he is being, you know, very forceful, but he's really scared. He's terrified, and he's freaking out. And in his condition, he's likely to make really desperate decisions. This is a big challenge for the country at this time. Uh-oh, time is up, and we've got to go. Thanks so much, Gwen, for calling in. Thank you all for calling in. I feel very lucky and very privileged to be in your company, and I really do enjoy hearing from you. So it's the weekend. Those of you who are dads out there, happy Daddy Day, and surround yourself this weekend with your loved ones, and remember, the task is rebuilding. We have some major rebuilding to do, and it starts at home. And we'll see each other, hopefully, on Monday. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.